It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
They're back. If there wasn't any doubt about it over the last two nights coming out of the All-Star break, it's official now. The Celtics are back in action and looking good on both sides of the floor. They just dismantled the Grizzlies tonight. Final score, 109-98. This is the Celtics postgame show. And I am Bobby Manning, going to be joined by our good friend of the show here, James Hollis, Snotty Drippin. In just a few minutes, we'll get him up on the air, but whew, what a blowout it was. Celtics led the Grizzlies by 26 at the half, and it got as close as 11 in the final minutes, but it was never that close all night long. Grizzlies didn't pull within 13 until 3 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter, rather. Irving drops 25. He hit his first four threes. Celtics hit 8 of their first 11 threes in this game. And Rozier came in with a brilliant, brilliant bench performance that we've seen out of him a few times this year and makes you feel good about this bench unit. And there were some interesting developments in this game. Greg Monroe did not play a single second in a blowout. So that spoke volumes to me. Interested to see what Brad Stevens has to say about that one. And Daniel Tice, Aaron Baines coming back from injury looked fantastic tonight. The Celtics bench, as they search for lineups, looked phenomenal in this one and shot efficiently too. 50 bench points for the Celtics, outscoring the Grizzlies 50-29 in the bench point category. So we're going to talk about all this tonight. I got a couple categories lined up, and we are going to get Snotty Drippin in here in just 1 second, but got to do a little read, as we always do. SeatGeek is the presenting sponsor of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. It's the easiest, smoothest way to buy tickets. All you do is open it up on your app store, whether you got iTunes, whether you got Android. It's on both platforms. Green is a good deal. Red is a bad deal. And they have been revolutionary in that aspect. Make it so easy to buy tickets. That's SeatGeek. And you can get $20 off your first ticket purchase by going to the SeatGeek app and using our code Celtics Roundtable. That's one word, Celtics Roundtable. Get on SeatGeek today, whether you're looking for Celtics games or any NBA games. I know we got people tuning in across the country, across the world, and all the way in San Diego with us tonight is our co-host, Snotty Drippin, who is going to give us the first word here tonight, if I can get him in here. There we go. What's up, James?
What's up, man? So, yeah, Snotty Drippin, a.k.a. James Hollis. I only had one eye on this game because once they blew it open, I was pretty confident.
Oh, man. I was looking at the clock with 40 minutes left until the show saying, oh, Jesus.
I was watching, obviously. It was just I was a little not concerned, right? But we know that the Celtics sometimes play down to level of competition. And it was 8-1 early. And then I saw it was, they came back and they were up like 14-11 or whatever. And then I blinked and I saw there was both, it was like 21-20 or whatever. That turned around again, it was like 40-26. And then the route was kind of on from there. Some people might, a pessimist might be concerned that they let him get it back to, 11 late. But it's about the process, not the results with the Celtics, right? The All-Star break couldn't have came at a better time. They were struggling to come into All-Star break. They all look rejuvenated. They look reinvigorated. There were times before the All-Star break when they were just reacting to everything the other team did instead of, attacking defensively or offensively. They were letting the other team dictate the pace. They looked sluggish. They looked a little bit just out of sorts. And now, of course, they still got young guys go through their struggles. Tonight, Jason Tatum didn't have a very good game. But, again, Kyrie and Al Horford and, the vets kind of, they look like they're ready to roll down the stretch. And so far, this is another quality game for the Celtics.
And Irving continues to be incredibly efficient, especially out of this break. I think what says most about anything out of this All-Star break, and a lot of people were blaming the amount of games they had to play. A lot of people were blaming Marcus Smart's absence, that little swoon they went on going into the break. shocked a lot of people, had a lot of people concerned, but I think you can point to that energy factor in how they shot tonight and how they've shot since the All-Star break. 33% or 32% by the end of the night from the three-point field. They were about 50% at halftime, I think, 11 of their first 22. And then, you know, I'd call anything after half tonight a wash. When you get up 26 a half, it really doesn't matter what's going to happen after that. I mean, the Grizzlies got as close as 11. It was never that close, as I said in the opener. And the Celtics pretty much poured shots on top of them. So I guess my first question of the night, Snotty, is this who the Celtics are? Are they a great three-point shooting team? Because obviously we've seen this group over the past few years really make the three the center of its offense. And this group has come and gone. You know, Irving is a phenomenal three-point shooter. He's going to be up at that 39-40 mark. Tatum has been incredibly efficient out there all year. Horford, a very efficient shooter. But it seems like everybody else, whether it's Brown, Morris, they kind of come and go outside. Do you see this group as a great three-point shooting team, and is that going to be an advantage for them come playoff time?
I see it as a team that's missing probably, you know, their best or second-best three-point shooter all season in Gordon Hayward.
And, it all goes back to Hayward every time.
It does. I mean, like, so you got these rookies and young guys who that's one thing that's funny. One of the conversations about Brad Stevens I saw going around, which I had to laugh out loud, Boston, I think, if I remember correctly, they generate, like, some of the most open to wide open shots.
Yep.
They just shoot, and then they shoot like the worst. One of the worst shooting teams on open.
And you can blame that all on Marcus Smart, of course.
Well, he's definitely part of it, but it's also, you know, it's the fact that the guys they just miss shots. And someone tried to say, hey, how good of a coaching job is Stevens doing if the offense that he's running is getting good looks, but the guys aren't scoring, then is that good offense or not? And that just didn't make sense to me, right? Because, I mean, a good shot is a good shot. They generate good offense. They get open looks, and guys are just, you know, they're out of rhythm. They're young. They're tired, whatever. They're not making shots as often as they should. And yeah, it happens. You know, it happens. So I think, obviously, next year we'll see it with Gordon Hayward back and Jason Tatum in year two. Jaylen Brown in year three. He's been greatly improved over, you know, his first season. And, yeah, these guys, they'll just learn, and they'll be better, and they'll be more comfortable. So, I don't know if they'll be a great three-point shooting team. They probably will never be the Rockets, right? They'll never be shooting, you know, 45 threes a game. And they'll never probably – they should be amongst the leaders in percentage, you know, come next year. Let's hope so. So yeah. I think it's more of a fluky thing right now. They just, you know, they miss a lot of shots, so we'll see.
Yeah, especially in a game like this, it's hard to read into a second half. And I was really trying to read into this game. Coming out of All-Star break, I've been looking at those lineups hard, trying to get some sense of what the best lineups are on this team. And it, you can't tell. I think there was about one lineup all game you could really read into, and that was that Rozier, Smart, Ogilvy, Morris, and Tice group that just really handed it to the Grizzlies, energy-wise, shooting-wise, defensively, turning that into offense. They worked a +17 stretch on the Grizzlies through the second quarter there, and Stevens pretty much let them ride that whole second quarter. Great play out of them. Terry Rozier, we talked about him a number of times on the show this year, but he is finally turning into that reliable bench scorer this team needs. Him and Morris look like they can possibly combine for 20, 25 points a night on their best nights, which is exactly what you need from your bench. Obviously, you're not going to get 50 points from your bench the way the Celtics did tonight. But if you have two guys scoring at a steady clip like those two seem to be capable of, and then you have Smart facilitating everything right there, I think the one big takeaway you can take away from this game that really didn't have a lot to show for is that bench unit. And Tice, what more can we say about Tice? We got to have a conversation about him, Snotty, because Ainge got this guy out of Germany for pennies, making less than $1 million this year, a little over $1 million next year. And no lie, this guy has been among the most efficient, defensively dominant players in this draft class. And you can't even consider this guy part of this draft class. Ainge just found him overseas. He's never played in the NBA before. He went undrafted back in 2013, I believe. And this guy is just making a mockery of second units. Celtics started him against the Knicks the other night, and he went to town on them. And I know they're playing bad teams right now, but this isn't anything new. This guy has been balling for the Celtics all year, and there's so many stories about on this team, Snotty. But this guy's story has kind of gone underrated with Irving, with the rookies, the way they've played. You got to talk about this guy right up there with Jason Tatum, the season he's having, especially on that bench unit.
I mean, you're not wrong, man. He's been quietly, you know, he's a rookie. People can argue what they want, whatever year draft class was, he's a rookie. And he's been one of the better rookies in the league. Sure, he's not been Jason Tatum. He has not been, you know, Dennis Smith Jr. He's not going to put up these giant flash numbers, but he's been really, really good. And like you said, I've said this before on the show, he's won he was Defensive Player of the Year overseas, and he shows he can get out to the perimeter, he's blocking shots, he's tipping passes and getting steals. He has been such a difference maker. And it's funny because Boston, we always say they have Boston need the rim protector, they need this, that. He provides so much of what they need that, you know, it's less of a problem than it's been in the past.
And think of the scouting. Think of how international the game has gone over the past 5 years or so, even 10 years. How did this guy go so overlooked? I mean, everybody's getting a chance in the NBA nowadays. You have the G League growing like crazy. And this guy's over in Germany playing very good basketball. As you said, Defensive Player of the Year over there. Had been years since he'd been drafted, so that probably plays into it too. But you look at this guy's game. He finishes at the rim very smoothly. He has that nice little flip underneath, the finger roll that works very well for him. He has great sense of the pick and roll. Everybody's finding this guy rolling to the rim left and right. I think like he caught three lobs at one point in the second quarter there. And he can shoot the three too. Obviously, he's not letting it fly. Yeah, that's the difference right there. And when he's doing that, on top of everything else, he's a perfect player for modern basketball. And I've said this a few times on Twitter, but some of these bench units that the Celtics throw out there, I'm not going to compare him to Al Horford, but the way he plays out there and what he gives the team when he's on the court, he almost plays a Horford-esque role for that bench unit. He can handle just a little bit. He can shoot outside. He'll finish inside, and he's just active everywhere on defense.
Yeah, man, and it's weird that Monroe didn't play tonight at all, did he?
Yeah, so, like, we were going to get to that.
Yeah, it's and that's fine. My point is that, you know, when you look at the Celtics big man rotation between Al Horford and, you know, Daniel Tice, and then you add in Greg Monroe, that's a quality big man rotation. That's a high quality big man rotation. So, like, yeah, man, I can't say enough about how good Tice has been. I'll get into some numbers in a second. I'm looking up some things so we can talk about how amazing he's been.
So
go ahead.
We're going to talk about all three of these centers tonight. That's really going to be the theme of the show. So if you want to call in at 347-215-7771, you are free to join me and James all the way up until 11 o'clock Eastern. That's for you. I got the Twitter live stream going right here, too. So if anyone's watching on Twitter, 347-215-7771, talking to you over there. Give us a ring. We want to hear from you tonight. I already see a caller on the line. We will get to him in just a second, but first, our call lines are sponsored by RX Bar, and I got a package of RX Bars this week. Big on my bars, and not the kind that you go to down the street and have a few drinks at. I'm talking about energy bars, and RX Bar is the whole food protein bar, which means they're made of 100% whole ingredients. They want to be transparent and upfront with their customers, and they are. The ingredients, egg whites, dates, nuts are all on the cover of their packaging. And their ingredients have the texture and taste to back it up. Real cocoa, coconut, their ingredients are great. And beyond being a go-to snack with a number of nutritional boxes, they actually taste great. Very chewy, you have great texture on there. I've enjoyed them a lot. And you got a number of different flavors you can try from. So if you want to try bunch of different flavors, get a pack for less than you typically pay, you can get 25% off your first order of RX bars. Just go to rxbar.com/CLNS and you'll get a free trial pack, which is I think a dozen bars. So RX bars are presenting sponsor on the call lines. I see a call here already, and Snotty is getting us some stats, so we might as well take this call while he digs into the basketball reference world. We got 413 on the line. Who is with us here on the Celtics post game show?
I'm sorry, I'm just listening. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, we got a listener right there. No call screeners tonight, so we're just guessing. What are your stats you got there, Snotty?
So I'm looking at it. Tice really had – he didn't shoot threes early. And through – basically through 2017, let's look what the numbers look like. He's been amazing since the calendar rolled over, though. But to start the year for his first 38 games, he was shooting 19% from three. 19, and that's still December 31st. I don't know if he you know got some home cooking for Christmas or what, but since that day, starting from January 3rd, when they played Cleveland, and they whooped Cleveland that day. Daniel Tice has been shooting. Take a guess. What do you think he's been shooting for three for 2018?
I want to say 36.
He's shooting 45%, 44.8% from downtown.
Since the new year started?
In the last 21 games. He's not shooting a ton of them. He's only shooting like 1.5 per game. But the point is he's making them. He's making 44.8% of his threes. He's he's been a net positive. He's averaging a little less than 7 points a game, 5 rebounds a game, almost a block in just 18 minutes a game.
So, yeah, I want to talk about him. I want to talk about Baines. I want to talk about Monroe here on the show tonight. It's a big center night, and this has been my favorite conversation going back a couple of weeks now because this is the biggest the Celtics have been in my whole lifetime. I've not seen a team that runs four centers now the way they're doing at this point. And all of them bring a little bit of something to the table. Obviously, Horford's your central character there. He's going to play center in the big minutes in those smaller lineups. But you have a number of bigs to choose from here with very different skills. And, you know, a lot of people have talked down on Baines. I know he's been banged up a little bit. I know Tice has probably outplayed him on the season or at least has played up to his level. They've been about even this year, I think. But make no mistake. Baines has had a fantastic season. I know he's playing with the starters, and I know that contributes to the 96-97 defensive rating he has. It's all about everybody, not just him. But it's no mistake that he plays center in their best lineups overall when it comes to net rating. The guy is a menace in the paint. He's going to be physical. He's going to get into bigger opponents. He's going to take the pressure off Horford, which is very important. And I know he's limited offensively, but he gives you a little bit of something too. He can get out to 15 feet. He can hit that little floating jump shot. He's great at the pick and roll himself. Good cuts. He can't step out to three the way Tice does. But I feel like people have been low on Baines. And if you look at the way he played tonight, not only in the first half establishing that lead, but he kept after in the second half, especially in that third quarter. The Celtics had to keep up the energy for 24 minutes to close this game. And he was chasing shots, finishing rebounds behind guys, missing shots. I mean, he's not a zero on offense, is he, Snotty? I know he's not great, but he's not inept out there.
No, like you said, he just brings a different aspect. He's actually a really good offensive center with the fact, and that being, there's more to offense than just scoring. He sets really good screens. He finds himself, you know, he finds space around the rim and finds himself in the dunker spot, you know, for drop offs and as a relief valve when guys driving get balled up. His hands aren't great, but I mean they're passable, and he will dunk things around the rim. And like you said, he stretches out to 15. So he knows, and the good thing about him, he knows the limitations. He has that weird little jump hook, the little like catapult jump hook that he'll hit too. So he doesn't shoot great from the floor, and it's weird. He has those games where he seems like he can't hit anything, and that's why he's shooting 41% for the season. But I mean, since January 1st, but again, since the year turned over, he's averaging 5 and 5 in 17 minutes a night. So we got two centers combined averaging about 12 points and 10 rebounds. And that's, you know, those are our two backup centers. That's incredible. Since January 1st, they're combining for about 12 points and 10 rebounds a game. You can't beat that from your backup bigs, you know. And, yeah, he starts a lot. You know, he started 17 of those 20 games since January 1st. But, yeah, I mean, those are role players. You can't beat that from role-playing bigs.
You can't. And they found one of them on a mid-level exception. They found another one over in Germany for pennies. And kudos to Ainge. Ainge has gotten a lot of credit. He'll probably win Executive of the Year. And obviously, adding Irving is one thing. Adding Jason Tatum in the draft is another thing. But adding those good role guys for cheap prices when you have not only three max players on the roster, I guess Irving isn't a max player yet, but he's that caliber.
Yes.
When you have three max players on the roster and one of them goes down, you had to have that safety net of depth. And everyone was saying going into the season, oh, where are all these people going to end up? All these wings, all these big men. And they found places for all of these guys pretty much. So that brings me to something we got to address. And I don't want to be overreactionary to this right now. It's only been about a week or two since he's arrived. But Greg Monroe, as we talk about the centers who have had so much success on this roster, Monroe doesn't play tonight. He's minus 28 since he's joined the Celtics. And that's just the beginning of the story. He has not looked good visually. He plays in the low post like we expected. All he does is really just back his opponents down. I know he can play a little bit in the high post with passing, but he's not going to score from there. Most of his games predicated on post-ups, long possessions in the low post, backing guys down. And then defensively, looks slow on his feet. When he's on offense playing that deep post role, he's slow to get back on defense, and I see teams blown by them into the paint as he's trying to get back in the transition. I'm not loving it, Snotty. I'm just not loving the signing so far. There was obvious concerns about whether he fit with this team. They used their exception on him. I guess they didn't really have a different option, but I don't know. This wasn't really a no-risk signing. There's a very tough fit with this guy here, it feels like.
What's the risk? I mean, if it's not working, then guess what they'll do? They'll sit him down. And, you know, he can even complain, but that's just how Boston does. There's a strong culture there. So I get what you're saying, but you got the guy was very gently used in his time in Phoenix. I'm looking at his time in Phoenix, and look, he had, like, weeks when he wouldn't play. You know, he play a game, play for weeks. So I'm pretty sure his conditioning is not where it needs to be. And that's why you're seeing – and he's learning a brand-new system, you know, in midseason. He's coming to a team that's in full stride, and he's just getting started. So basically, again, I know he's a veteran. And you can say, oh, he should keep his body right. But he's a big guy anyway, right? Moose – his nickname is Moose, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, so – hey, he's averaging almost 6 points and 5 rebounds in less than 14 minutes a game. He's not shooting well. He's a steal a game. Sure, he's been a negative, and I've watched. He looks awkward out there. He's laboring a little bit. Hey, if this was a rest game for him, that's okay. He's played six. He played the last six games. I'm fine with it because it adds depth where Boston needs depth at the bigs. You know, I mean, I'm looking around that roster. Are we going to add another point guard? You got Marcus Smart, and you even got Shane Larkin as your emergency break, and Terry Rozier. You know, you can add another wing. There's plenty of guys on the wing already. You know, I guess people were clamoring for Tyreke Evans. He's a high usage, ball dominant kind of guy. When you already got Marcus, Marcus Morris, you already got Kyrie. And Greg Monroe seems like he was in a bad situation in Phoenix. I'm pretty sure he's, like, thanking his lucky stars that he's in Boston now on the team that they're winning. Sure, he has a bit part, but he still feels like he's been rescued, you know? And
yeah.
So if he's not complaining, I think that we'll look back on today, and I think there'll be at least one game either later this, you know, later the regular season or early in the playoffs. He's going to come through in a big way, and you're going to be like, okay, that's why they signed him.
Mm-hmm. And if that happens, I mean, that makes the signing worth it right there. I guess that's why it's not really any risk when it comes to the signing. And we'll keep an eye on how he is attitude-wise, because there are going to be games where he probably doesn't play very much. This team has so many players that they're really going to be able to line up with teams matchup-wise and play certain guys that fit with matchups and sit certain guys that don't. And I'm sure there'll be a team in the East that they do go up against. There's a lot of interiors in the East. There's plenty of room to play big men. I think that's why they're well suited to go through the East and be one of those final two teams. And in fact, looking at the standings today, since All-Star break, when they were down two games to the Raptors, the Celtics were a half game back as recently as yesterday. And I believe they are now tied with the Raptors for the top spot in the East, which is going to be important.
Yeah, Boston had won today, and the Raptors had lost. Boston
Raptors won today, yeah. So it stays where it is.
Exactly. If Boston had won and Raptors lost, they would have been percentage points ahead of the Raptors again. And it is what it is, right? Raptors are really riding high right now. The thing is, though, like, it's more important to be playing well in April, May than it is right now. We see this every year. I don't know if you remember last season, the Clippers in December had, like, the best offensive rating in the league. And people were saying, oh, is this going to challenge Golden State? Last year, I think the Raptors had a stretch like this, too. I think they played and the Wizards had a really good stretch after December last year where they looked, you know, this is the best team in the East. Teams, the league and the season is about ebb and flow. And right now, the Raptors are riding high. Boston went through a little lull just now, and they're on the uptick again. It's not about now. It's about how we look first round of the playoffs.
Absolutely. But do you think, say, ultimately it is Raptors-Celtics in the East Finals. Maybe the Raptors knock off the Cavs in the second round. Maybe the Celtics knock off the Cavs in the second round. Do you think home court is going to be key in that Raptors-Celtics series? Because we did see home court play out pretty importantly in that Wizards series last year.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It'll definitely make a difference, right? Because it's all about protecting your home court. Boston's been good at it. The Raptors have been good at it. So, you know, you got home court and you win that first game, that, you know, you put all the pressure on the other team immediately. And the good thing about that, though, is, again, the Raptors also are dealing with a lot of young guys who, sure, they're confident right now and they're playing really well, but the playoffs are a different animal. And so let's see how Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby and those guys, how they perform in the playoffs. So, you know my take on this. I've already told you plenty of times. I'm at peace with whatever happens for the simple fact that I know that this is not the final form of the Celtics, right? Mm-hmm. Next season they're going to have, it's like getting another big free agent signing when Gordon Hayward comes back. So I'm not too stressed about anything. I know that this team can compete with anybody in the West at their peak, but I know that, you know, again, when you're dealing with the youth and you're dealing with, the inconsistency of youth can come back to bite you, and that's not their fault. So I don't really stress about that.
Speaking of the youth and consistency, I think it's time to move on past that center talk and address someone who has been on a roll lately. And this guy's biggest issue was consistency. I've talked about that a lot on this program here throughout the season. Jaylen Brown is starting to hit his stride, I think. And he obviously had that phenomenal Rising Stars game where he just looked 10 times better than he normally does, and he normally looks pretty good out there for the Celtics on a game-by-game basis, but he just looked like a superstar in that Rising Stars game. And I know it's an exhibition, I know there's probably passive defense out there, but the way he was dribbling in the half court, the way he was just blowing by guys and slamming on everyone and calling it his dunk contest, and the confidence he just approached everything with out there at All-Star Weekend was so impressive. And beyond that, because that doesn't really count, double figures tonight, double figures in two of the last three games before that. And if we go back to the end of January, Jaylen Brown has now posted double figures in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of the last 11 games for the Celtics. What's been different? Before that, he had no such streak this year.
So I counted 15 games coming into tonight. Out of 21, he scored double figures. He's been really good. He's still inconsistent. Like, he'll have, like, I'm looking at it now, he had a game with 4, then he had 21, 16, 12, 17. But I think that's more about, again, how that team, the team ebb and flow, right? Like, Boston's biggest strength is the fact that they have so many weapons, and they, you know, they share the ball, they move the ball, and they find the open shot. And it also is part of their biggest weakness, I think, is that outside of Kyrie, there's not one guy you can count on to go get you 15, 16 a night. Even though Jaylen can do it and Tatum can do it, the big difference for him is confidence. You can see when he's attacking. Like last game against the Knicks, he was outstanding. He had 24 points on 17 shots. The game before that, he had 8, 8 points on 8 shots. People forget the guy's only 21, man. He's still only 21, and he's incredible. So, like you said, he looked like a superstar during the All-Star weekend. he has superstar moments. He has, I think, I want to say superstar DNA, where he's not afraid of the moment. He's not scared of anybody. The next step for him, is the next step of his evolution is going to be when things aren't going your way, you got to find ways to produce. We see that with Jalen. He'll miss a shot or two, and he'll either start pressing, and he'll, you know, then he'll go 2 for 13, or he'll kind of stop being aggressive, and he won't take a lot of shots. The next step for him is learning how, okay, I'm missing shots. Let me go get fouled. I'm missing shots. Let me get to the free throw line. Let me get some easy layups. Instead of just, you know, instead of being a rhythm player, he has to be an impact player, which he definitely is, but that's going to be his next step. So I think, yeah, the big thing for him is confidence. The minutes are there. He's getting his shots, him and Tatum. And yeah, when he's confident and he gets rolling, it's not many young guys in the league that you could say, all right, they're better than him. It's all about him maintaining that level of intensity.
And it's been a long month with the All-Star break and everything, but it's easy to forget. He hit a huge game winner of the Wizards to start this month on February 8th. Step back three in the corner. Had a big game-winning three against the Nuggets earlier in this season. And I think there's a number of games you can point to on the year as a whole that he has had either the key basket or a key basket down the stretch of a game to put the Celtics in position to win. I mean, even if we go back to that 16-game win streak early in the season, he was playing great basketball back then too. And he is looking like a legitimate, you know, second scoring option on this team behind Irving. Because obviously Horford, it is what it is with him offensively. He's not going to be your go-to scorer in that sense. But if you need a bucket down the stretch of a game, it's starting to look more and more like Brown can get you that. And he's still not the greatest creator for himself in the half court, but if you're setting this guy up, whether it's a cut to the basket, whether it's an alley-oop, whether it's a dish to the corner, and there were quite a few of those tonight, it feels like he's becoming more and more reliable in those moments. And obviously the biggest thing you're looking for from him eventually becoming a star is game-by-game consistency, as you talk about, working through inconsistencies within games, the tough moments, not letting those get to him. But when it comes to the big moments, already we're starting to see that this guy can be a reliable force, and that's going to be very important in the playoffs. I wouldn't mind setting up a crucial play in the postseason for him to take the last shot.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's the talent is there. The guts are there. It's all about just making the shots. And at 21, he just doesn't always come through. I don't even want to make the comparison because people are going to end up saying, oh, you're comparing him to Kobe, so I'm not going to make the comparison. The point is, young players, they need these reps, and he gets them, and he comes through sometimes. He doesn't come through sometimes. And you just assume that as he gets older, he's going to learn, and he'll come through more often than not as he gets older, right? He learns. But, yeah, that kid's incredible, man. And just looking at him and Jason Tatum and then next year Gordon Hayward, not many teams have that kind of versatility and talent on the perimeter at three positions. You know, I don't know, sure, it's the Warriors, the big name talents, but my point is, like, these guys are, they're going to be really good, man. And,
well, like, Andre Iguodala is getting older. You figure he's probably going to get replaced in that Warriors lineup next season when it comes to their, like, big-time lineup in the end of games. Maybe Bell replaces him in that or someone else out there. But then you're still talking about Curry, Thompson, Durant, and Green. So if you put up, say, Bell and the Big Four in Golden State against the Celtics' two young guys, Horford, Hayward, and Irving, who do you think has the best lineup in the NBA next season?
I'm sorry, man. I still got to go Golden State. The fact that they got two MVP-type guys and two other All-Stars, even though I think next year will be a lot closer between, like, when you look at Jalen and Tatum and Gordon Hayward versus – Klay Thompson and Draymond and who's that third guy? Jordan Bell? Yeah, that's definitely a lot closer. Definitely a lot closer next season. But just having KD and Steph is the difference maker. Those guys, they're what I call God-level players, right, where they can destroy your whole defensive scheme just by being on the court. KD and Steph can. While right now it's only Kyrie who's kind of like that. When he's hot, Kyrie's that kind of guy too. But we've seen sometimes, you know, he goes through his lulls. He's just not Steph, and that's fine. That's not an insult to Kyrie. Kyrie's awesome. So yeah, man, it's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. Look what the Celtics have coming down the pipeline. Tatum right now, I think, even though he was rejuvenated by the All Star break, there becomes a point when your legs become almost like rubbery. It's called, I say when you pop, which means no matter, you can sit down and recover for a weekend or two, but like he's already kind of trying to push through that wall. And he, you know, he's struggling a little bit right now. But his body is going to be stronger next year. He'll be ready for the rigors of the season, and we'll see him.
And he didn't get the benefit that Brown did of taking certain games off here or there, not being used consistently. That's a benefit to him in some sense, but he's also playing 26 to 30 minutes every night. So right out of college for one season, two seasons out of the high school schedule, he has basically taken, over the course of 2 years, two massive leaps in the amount of games that he's playing. And on top of that, he had to deal with that massive schedule that the Celtics had in the 2017 portion of this season. So I definitely think we're seeing that impact him in some sense. I will say, though, the way he's been able to keep up his three-point efficiency, and when we talk about fatigue in teams and players, that seems to be the first thing to go, is that three-point efficiency. And sure, he's not hitting, you know, 53% or whatever he was early in the year, but he's still a very reliable three-point shooter, and he is getting wide-open shots more often than not on this team. And I would figure, I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I'd say he's probably still one of the more reliable guys when it comes to that wide-open shot, and his three-point percentage on the whole is still 43% this year. So the fact that he's kept that up is, you know, phenomenal in any sense.
So let's go back. Let me ask you, what do you think he's shooting from three since the new year in 2018?
Oh, God, here we go. So I figure it's not great, but I think it's still pretty solid, so I'm going to go
34.4. There we go. 34.4. So he's about league average. And, again, I think that's more of a function of fatigue. And somebody else brought this to my attention. If you look, you see it. Remember he dislocated his finger in that one game?
I was actually at that game.
Which game was that? Was that right after Christmas?
It was the Miami game that they lost at the buzzer. Irving took the last shot, and he just rimmed out.
So right before Christmas. Mm-hmm. That is a line of demarcation. And if you look before that game and after that game, his three-point shooting fell off a cliff. And I'm wondering if that finger's been bothering him as far as with his release. He's shooting, since that game, he's shooting 32.5% from three. Since that game. And before that, give me 2 seconds. I'll tell you what he was shooting before that. But, I'm wondering if that is the game, like, hey, as a shooter, your finger being swollen, your finger being, you know, just not feeling right. It's all about feel and touch when you're shooting. So if he's having something going with that finger, before that game he was shooting 51.5% from three. So
it's impressive. It's still impressive with the workload, with the dislocated finger. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying like his finger's wrecked, but that's a clear line of demarcation. 51% before that game, 32% afterwards.
And wasn't the concern with him out of college, and I was big on him out of college, but I remember the conversation nationally was, can he shoot threes? And the fact that, like, at his worst, he looks like a league average three-point shooter is kind of ridiculous. Like, how does that just happen over the course of one summer, it seems? Like, a guy going from his biggest concern being three-point shoot. I mean, did everyone just misread him?
Well, and this is where you got to give Danny Ainge and the scouting staff credit, right? Because they saw his stroke and they thought, okay, his stroke is beautiful. So they're thinking, why can't this guy be a NBA three-point shooter, even if he didn't really show it in college, whatever. So, and then a big thing that people, you know, they look at is, what does a guy look like between the end of his college season and then when they come in and work out for us? And from what I understand, Tatum came in and had a dynamite workout for the Celtics as far as shooting the ball. And, you know, make or miss, they liked what they saw enough, but they said, you know what, this is our guy. You know, eventually that's the way it came down to. So, he's long. You know, he's almost 6'9". He has good athleticism, and he had that beautiful – when you got a beautiful mid-range shot and you can hit free throws, I mean, hitting threes is the next logical step. So, and again, in the pros, you have more spacing. Like you said, he's getting a lot of wide open shots that he would not get in college.
Yeah.
So
it almost never feels like he's taking a shot under pressure. He is always getting those kickers. He's sort of taking over the Jay Crowder role when you think about it.
He is like a souped up Jay Crowder, where he's getting open threes and he's been incredible defensively. That's been the most impressive part to me. We all knew he could score a little bit, so that's fun and cool, but the way sometimes, you know, he's getting up and blocking power forwards and meeting centers at the rim.
He is stuffing guys off the glass.
Yeah, they try to like goofy foot him and quick layup him, and he's like, nope, it's not happening. He has such a great wingspan. It does remind me kind of like a Paul George, you know, a cross between like a Paul George and KD. KD obviously is way bigger at 6'11", and that huge 7-something wingspan. But Tatum's like 6'9", and, you know, he's still kind of growing. He's only 20 or whatever, 19.
They list him at 6'8", and I stood next to him in the locker room or walked by him in the locker room in one of the games I covered this year, and there's always that height thing. Like, was Garnett 6'11", or was he 7'1"? Like, you never really know how tall these guys are. But, like, from between standing next to him and standing next to Horford, who's, like, 6'10", 6'11", Tatum might be as tall as Horford just from, like, walking by both of them. Tatum is a massive person. And I don't know if it was the length of his arms that threw me off because he's very long. But he looked taller than he's listed, definitely.
And that's the thing, right? They use old data from Draft Express or whatever, and that kind of gets locked in for these players. People even tell me that Horford is probably more like 6'8".
Yeah.
Right? I've heard Horford not really big. He's listed as, what, 6'10", 6'11"?
Makes sense with the rebounding.
Yeah, well, I just heard he's, you know, it's fine. He's mobile. He's great. I love Horford. If Tatum ends up 6'10", oh my goodness. Yeah, he lives at 6'8", 205. If he ends up 6'10", you know, 225, 230, you got a monster on your hands there.
And the way these guys still grow into, like, past the age that you should be growing at is ridiculous. Like, Jerome Robinson, who's having a huge year at BC this year in the college game, he entered high school, like, barely 6 feet, and now he's 6'6", maybe still growing, having a monster year in the ACC. The way these guys grow is insane. And maybe Tatum's still growing himself. That would be something on top of all of this. Maybe we'll see Tatum playing some center for Stevens one day when small forwards are taking over center roles in the NBA the way things seem to be going. Speaking of modern centers, I hate to do this on this show, and we're not going to have a conversation about him tonight, but you see what Anthony Davis is doing out in New Orleans?
Yeah. Tonight he went bonkers. And, yeah, we're not doing that. I
53, 17, kind of, and 5.
Yeah. And I think they're like 6-0 in the last six. And, you know, so he's my worry about that, though, I mean, that's not sustainable, right? This guy, he's a supernova right now. And we love it. And he's doing everything he can for his team. He's going to burn himself. Playoff time is going to come around, and he's not going to have anything left.
Man, that was so sad. They had something special going there between him and Cousins, and, like, a lot of things could have happened to Cousins, but for it to be an Achilles at his age, that is just really sad. For a sad franchise, really.
Yeah. I don't want to – I feel bad for him, and I hope he bounces back. I hope he's one of the few that can buck the trend, right? And don't let an Achilles, drastically alter his game. But, you know, the numbers don't look good. The percentage don't look good. But you can't speak enough about what Brow's doing. I think in his last 10 games, he's averaged like 41 points a game. You know,
44, 38, 42, 45, 27, and now 57 over his last six. So averaging in the 40s over this recent stretch, taking on the responsibility that Cousins left there in the middle. And he has an enormous impact in the middle of that court, playing in the paint, double-digit rebounder when he's playing that center role, averaging about 15 rebounds through the stretch. This guy, it's too bad he plays in New Orleans. It's too bad he's played on a stinky team his whole NBA career, and he's probably going to continue to for the foreseeable future, because if this guy played somewhere prominent, you'd talk about him in the same breath as Durant, LeBron, Curry, the top players in this league. He's absolutely the best big man in the league in my mind, the way he impacts both sides of the floor, and it's too bad, man. We're seeing Kevin Garnett all over again, I think. He just can't escape the misery of a bad organization, and they got Cousins for him. They finally did something right, and what happens. It's too bad. But we got a caller here. 781 is with us on the RX Bar call line 15 minutes ago. If you want to join the call line, 347-215-7771. It's Bobby Manning. It's Snotty Drippin. We have talked centers, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, a blowout win that's really gone in the distance now in our conversation. But anything's open here for the final 15 minutes. We got 781 with us. I think I know who this is. Who we got here on the program?
This is Chris from Lexington.
Hey, Chris. I know you tried to tune in the other night. Thanks for bringing back with us.
Yeah, no problem. I just had a couple, you know, thoughts about today's game. I don't know if you heard the NBA Ringer recent one with Bill Simmons. I think they were, like, you know, summarizing the Sloan Conference, and basically they were kind of trashing on Kyrie's playmaking and his you know, the way he gets people the ball in the shooting pocket, and they were saying, like, you know, oh, he doesn't – if we only could get it to Jason Tatum, you know, where he wants it, you know, that kind of thing.
Who was saying that,
Simmons? Simmons, and, yeah, and I think the – a couple of other guys he had on there from the Ringer. And I was surprised because, you know, I honestly heard that too in the beginning of the year, also that, like, Kyrie couldn't make that kind of cross-court pass when he's driving to the weak side. And I've seen him from the beginning of the year. He was deferring. He was getting people involved. You know, I hadn't noticed that he wasn't, you know, that he was throwing people, you know, balls that were low or high or, you know, that kind of thing. So
I don't know. What have you seen, Snotty? Want to take that one?
I've seen that he's a better playmaker than people give him credit for. He's so creative. He's creative off the bounce. He's not at all selfish. When he's bottled up, he'll find guys. But he's just not a natural. He'll never be Chris Paul. He'll never be, you know, that's just not who he is. Even, look, Harden has turned himself into a pinpoint, amazing passer as a point guard. He's not Harden, but that's okay because that's not who he is.
Well, here's my thing about Irving as a passer. He's not Harden. He's not Westbrook. He's not putting up those gaudy assist numbers. John Wall, even, who probably puts up the biggest assist numbers in basketball. You're probably only seeing 4 or 5 assists a night from Irving, and maybe he isn't throwing the greatest passes to guys, but you know what he's not doing, and especially at high usage? This guy's never turning the ball over, like, ever. You rarely see Irving make silly turnovers. And I think, I mean, even though he's not taking a ton of risky passes and he's not showing off in the passing game the way some other guys do, the way he dribbles, the way he puts the ball out there, like the things he tries to do on the dribble, and of course he's capable of it, but the way he dribbles around the court, you'd expect a little more turnovers from him. And relative to his usage, and this is what, like, I was a pessimist on Irving at first, the trade, him as a Cavalier, wasn't the biggest Irving guy coming in, but what I accepted from day one is that this guy was going to be a high usage dribbler who didn't turn the ball over much. Tonight, only posted 2 turnovers to 5 assists, right where you want your top ball handler to be. I don't know, Chris, I'll bring you back in. Aren't you willing to deal with less assists if it is less turnovers?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that I've been impressed with, which I didn't know that he would do this coming in, is just the way he's handled the team in terms of, like, you know, he'll defer for the first, you know, 3 quarters. You know, he'll always kind of, like, you know, make a statement at first maybe, but then he'll get other people involved. And, like, at first he was almost, you know, being too passive in the beginning of the year, if you remember. Mm-hmm. And, and so – but, you know, one of the other things I thought that I really have liked what I've seen over the game since the All-Star break is how, like, Jaylen Brown, Rozier, these guys seem to be, like, kind of attack mode again and kind of getting downhill. And I think we need to, you know, we need to be in that mode. And Kyrie's been playing with great pace, and that's gotten me excited again because – you know, they were, I think kind of what happened with these guys is, you know, they won so much. If you remember in that streak, there was most games they should have lost, you know, and they kind of, you know, saved themselves at the end with these runs. And I think they just kind of, you know, got burnt out and gotten some bad habits. And Marcus Morris came over and they started kind of not moving the ball as much. And, you know, I think they probably thought they could just keep turning it on, and they just couldn't because, you know, they're young. And but they seem to have the groove back, so I'm excited about it.
I am too, Chris. Go ahead.
I think a big point, you know, if we're going to hold Kyrie, people talk about his playmaking, look at assist numbers. it's weird because they don't do the same thing with Steph. Who's the playmaker in Golden State? It's Draymond, right? Draymond is has been the primary kind of like the hub of the offense the last couple of years, and Steph has stepped away. And yeah, sure, he does stuff on ball too because he's Steph. But the point is, he's allowed to score and attack off ball because Draymond plays that point forward role. But that's what Al Horford does. You know, Horford to me is the hub of the offense. He kind of is the quarterback up there, pointing, running with how things go. Al Horford, Kyrie, and Marcus Smart are averaging between 4.7 and 5.1 assists a game. So you got three guys averaging total 15 assists a game. That's how that stuff is basketball. It's not about Kyrie pounding the rock and just, you know, he's gonna get all the assists because that's not how they play, right? So like if anybody is saying anything about Kyrie and his, they're not watching, right? Because when he does his thing and he's looking to score, but he's like you said, he's not selfish at all. He's finding guys. He's moving the ball. He's playing in within the offense, and because of that. A lot of times when he did with Marcus Smart, guess what? Smart is the primary playmaker. That's when.
Yeah.
So the system might be suppressed, but I've seen him make some. You know, he drives two or three defenders. He's finding guys in the corner. He's been fine. Like if you're just looking at assist numbers, you're doing it wrong. There's not about assist numbers with him in this Boston system.
It's amazing that at one point basketball was all about one guy making all the passes, and the point guard was like the center of passing and offenses. It was all around the point guard. In today's game, that's not really how it is, and not even close to how it is. You do have some point guards in this league who handle an enormous share of passing, but like you mentioned, the best teams in the league have multiple guys who can do it. Harden and Paul sharing the duty in Houston. Number of guys sharing the duty in Golden State, even though Steph is the center of the scoring there. Like you said, Green, even Iguodala and Durant can move the ball a little bit. And then on this team,
Durant's been averaging like 5 assists a game like this season, almost 5 or 6 a game. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's better to have anybody capable of making a play on the ball than just one person. Irving, Horford, Smart, all around 5 assists, like you said. Even Rozier, 2.5. Greg Monroe, when he does play, is going to get you a couple of games with his passing. And then we'll bring it back to Gordon Hayward, one of the better wing passers in all of basketball, one of the better pick-and-roll ball handlers in all of the game. That's my favorite thing about this Brad Stevens offense. The pressure really isn't on Irving to make plays. And if he does, it's great. If he doesn't, someone else is capable of doing it. And Horford, for all the crap he gets, I agree with you 100%. He is the center of playmaking on this team, and that's important. And it's important that these guys, Horford, Irving, keep the turnovers low, and they all do. 2 for Irving a game, 2 for Horford a game. Even Smart, who I think has been a little high in turnovers this year, is only 2.5. So,
yeah.
Passing is on lockdown on this roster.
A big thing for me is that Jaylen Brown has shown a lot. Like he's leaps and bounds more aware and better as a passer than he showed last year. He already has 12 games with 3 or more assists this season. He has 6 games with 4 or more. And, like, I'm watching him. He's getting guys on the pick and roll. He's getting guys in jail, right, getting them on his hip, and he's making plays out of that. He made a nice little play today where he penetrated. He kind of circled around, got back in the lane, and then he found Baines for his nice little corner jumper off the dribble. That's important, man. These minutes are also important to me. That's why this season is almost like one giant training ground for me because, you know, once Gordon Hayward comes back, it's a different ball game. But, yeah, to watch Jaylen Brown making plays off the dribble and finding guys, even as a pick-and-roll ball handler, it's like it's music to my ears.
And let's think about this stretch run now. So we got 5 minutes left on the show. Celtics get about 20 games left to play. They'll be up against the Hornets on Wednesday. Big game against the Rockets on Saturday, another national showcase for this team. And we all know how that last Houston game was. Probably the most entertaining game of this season. One the Celtics just really stole from Houston in the final seconds. And game winner by Horford in that one. 2 game winners for Horford this season, I got to say. But anyway, Celtics now have 6.5 games on the Cavaliers with 20 left to play. That feels relatively safe. They're right up there with the Raptors. Probably going to be a coin toss between those two for the 1 and 2 seed. Then looking toward the bottom of the conference, I think after the Cavaliers, Wizards, Pacers, Bucks are going to stay where they are. So really for the Celtics, you're probably thinking 76ers, Heat, or Pistons when it comes to first round matchups. Who would you like to see out of those three teams?
Oh, that's easy. The Pistons. Yeah, the Pistons are kind of a mess. And, you know, Reggie Jackson, even if he does come back, won't be 100%. That seems to be I won't say it's a cakewalk because we know Boston does squirrely things sometimes. But, yeah, I definitely – the Heat, he would be tough and the Philly would be the toughest. So if we're going in order of the most – I'd most like to see and least, it'd definitely be Detroit, then the Heat, and then Philly. Philly would worry me.
Philly's been a great story this year. J.J. Redick's been a nice addition for them besides some of the nonsense he's doing off the court. Embiid, Simmons, fantastic duo that's going to dominate for years to come if they're both healthy. And then, I mean, you got questions at guard there. They'd be tough. I think they'd be fun. It probably could be a little bit of a longer series with them. But I don't think they have the tools to beat Boston yet top to bottom. And I don't think me and you have really talked about the Fultz situation there. It's tough to talk about it because I don't think anyone really knows what's going on there. But is there – it's so hard to talk about it. He doesn't know what's going on. The organization doesn't know what's going on. He's pretty much out for the season at this point after just playing a week or two, after being one of the more like hype draft prospects I've seen in a while. Does this guy have any future in this league, or has he just – gone beyond repair at this point?
It's crazy to say that a kid his age, and you know, we've seen Embiid miss his first season, we've seen Ben Simmons miss his first season, so it's
for different reasons though.
It doesn't the point is missing a season doesn't mean you're gone beyond repair. Like it doesn't they have plenty of time to get him right, and like there's no reason to really rush him back. So I understand. Like, I don't know what's going on with the shot. I don't know what happened with the shot. I actually saw footage the other day of him shooting a couple fadeaways, and it looked good. Like the stroke looked good, actually. So is it a mental thing? Guys get the yips. Is it a physical thing? We're not sure, and that's weird. How you know? That's a whole other conversation. How sketchy Philly's been about the whole thing. But no, it's way too early to say he's ruined. And until we see it, until either he doesn't get on the court or he gets on the court and he looks like a bum, you can't say he's ruined, right? We have no clue. We do know the talent's there. We know that it's in him somewhere. We know that something happened with his shoulder and the shot looked funky. And we know that he's still only, what, 20, 21? So, he's fine. I'm not saying he's fine. It's way too early to pass judgment.
76ers fans have been chomping at the bit to have something to talk trash about for a long time now. And it seems like they're bordering on that edge of breaking out, getting ready to trash talk everybody about this team, and especially Celtics fans. There's something there between the 76ers fans and Celtics fans. I'm excited to get brewing over the next few years. Wouldn't mind seeing it start this year. I'm not scared enough of the 76ers in the first round to pass up how fun that series would be. I would take Embiid going back and forth with those fans. Even if it's a little bit longer than the Pistons would be, maybe the Celtics would take the Pistons in 4 or 5, or even Miami for that matter, just because Miami doesn't score like that. But I take the 76ers for the entertainment value. And, I mean, I am rooting for Fultz because the 76ers and Celtics have been linked throughout history. It's a long-standing rivalry. Great series back in 2012 as the 76ers went into the tank for, you know, half a decade now. But I'd like to see that rekindled. I think they're both on the verge of being very good at the same time. You got a couple of superstar talents out there in Philly. They're kind of a mess right now. They got talent that they're trying to work around. They're going to make the playoffs, which is a big step for them because you do have to go from bad to good at some point. But I hope they work out to the point where them and the Celtics can play some classic series. But anyway, that's our time for tonight. CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. Celtics win their third straight 109-98 over the Grizzlies, who we got to root for. Them and Cleveland are going for that number one pick. I'm going for the Grizzlies in that race. Anyway, I'm Bobby Manning. With me is James Hollis, a.k.a. Snotty Drippin. You know where to find him on Twitter, at Snotty Drippin. I'm at Real Bob Manning. The network is at CLNS Media. Be sure to try out SeatGeek and RX Bar. And we will see you on Wednesday night when the Celtics take on the Hornets, which is a game I'm almost certain is at home before they head out to Houston. We'll see who the hosts are for that one. It's it is the last of February. John Duke, Matt Chin, taking you post-game, 10 o'clock on Wednesday after Hornets Celtics in the Garden. For James, for the whole network, I'm Bobby Manning. Good night, everybody.
Peace.
This has been the Celtics post-game show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcast on the web.